With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to WPC Plus. That is the weighted pod created just for fantasy baseball lovers like you. And with me is Nicholas Scott, as always, not Burt Reynolds. I am the Roto Chef, Pierre Camus, and we're here to talk baseball. I know I feel like I say this every week, but we're still hoping and praying and really, really wanting baseball to start. It's not there, but I feel like I can almost smell baseball in the air. There's all these proposals that we've talked and written about.
Every day.
Every day. I mean, there's something new every day. We're not going to speculate, but just, I don't know, give me a random percentage. Between 0 and 100, how close do you think we are to actually getting a proposal that works, that means baseball will happen this year?
50-50. Like, I know.
I was hoping something over 50.
I know, man. Like, it's, you know, the latest sticking point is all the money stuff. And, like, that's, you know, the last thing, you know, besides all the, you know, pandemic related hurdles to clear. Now we have labor strike, and we're getting a lot stronger reactions from both sides on the labor strike portion of the hurdles to getting a season, and that's not great. The latest proposal calls for spring training, you know, an abbreviated spring training starting in, you know, 2 weeks, and it's hard right now to see that coming together, given the kind of rhetoric that's out there. And once again, just all the hurdles, you know, before we started here, I was looking at, reading something just about the testing procedures laid out and that they're going to be, you know, like, you know, every 3 days, and immediately just multiple players and multiple smarter people than me are just like, that is not nearly enough. Like, you know, and, you know, it's not just a matter of saying, okay, well, we'll test every day. Like, it's a logistics thing. They might not have that many tests to test hundreds of baseball players every single day for months. And I mean, we're obviously, Blake Snell is the big one in the news right now, but he's not the only one. There's a lot of players that have been, you know, talking for a while about, they have concerns about how exactly is this going to work, besides just the how is a season going to work with the logistics of where we're going to play and who we're going to play, just the logistics of how are you going to keep us safe? How are you going to keep the massive support staff that it takes to make baseball happen? How are you going to keep all those people safe and regularly tested? And it's just, it sucks. Like, you know, you kind of saw the labor things coming, just because it's baseball, but they came to that agreement in March. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I kind of forgot about them. Like, okay, we've covered this. Like, we're gonna, like, you know, prorated salaries. Okay, that makes sense. Great. Good to have that part behind us. And now that doesn't seem to be the case. So that's made me quite a bit more pessimistic, just because, you know, a couple of weeks is a big deal at this point. We're that late. We're halfway through May. And if now they're saying, okay, we can't start, we're not going to, they don't get things figured out in time to start spring training before the middle of June, as opposed to the beginning of June. Like, every time we're late enough in the process now that every time there's a delay, like, that dramatically, I think, decreases likelihood of being that's a bummer to say. I'm an eternal optimist, so I'm gonna change my mind. We're now switching to a 60-40 from the 50-50, because I don't want to be neutral Nelly. I'm going to still come down on the positive. So, yeah, we'll say 60-40 and fingers crossed because, man, no baseball, like, it's, like, no baseball would just really stink.
That would be, I mean, I'll tell you, I picked up a couple weeks ago MLB The Show. It's not quite the same. I'll just tell you, you know, it kind of fills sort of the empty void, and like watching, you know, World Series from the 90s, it, you know, it's kind of nice, but it's not the same, especially when there's no actual fantasy team to follow. The thing is, you've heard, I think it's from people who are probably more optimistic at this point, that these proposals, that it's going to happen, you know, that they're going to start, like you said, spring training in June, and we're going to start 4th of July. There's only so late they can get into the season. Like, yeah, we can go into November and whatever and expanded playoffs, but there's going to come to a point where it's either going to happen or it isn't. So what's interesting was we might be talking about, I hope we're talking about, you know, in a week or two, is, okay, yeah, they're going to do the short season. Now, which players are just going to skip out and say, yeah, sorry, I'm good, I'll just sit this one out. You know, like Snell's the first one who came out publicly, but there might be a lot of players who just don't. So that would change things quite a bit from our perspective. Well, what we did, though, is the fact that we don't know if there's going to be season, but there's hope, right? There's, I guess, momentum that there are proposals on the table for like an 80-game season. So what we did is we did a mock draft because that just gave us an excuse to draft, right? To pretend that there is going to be a season. We couldn't wait. I think a lot of people jumped at the chance. So we did a draft. What we're going to look at is, again, assuming something happens, right? Some sort of short season. We don't know, home parks, neutral parks, whatever. Right, we don't know, right? We're still guessing. But if there is a season at this point, how does that change things from a fantasy standpoint? So we jumped in there, 12-team draft, 5x5 roto, with our rotoballer staff, and we're going to look at kind of how it broke down, and we can compare this to what happened in March when we thought the season would be nice and normal. So let me ask you before we look at the actual draft board, did you go into this draft thinking that your strategy might be different? I know we're going to talk about specific players in a second who might have, you know, risen or fallen, but in general, we've talked about, you know, are categories more important? Do you really want to load up on things that might be valuable already, like steals, you know, focusing on starting pitching more? What does that do for your draft strategy if there's a short season?
So it changed a couple of things for me. You know, I will probably have a lot more, like once we get an actual plan into place and we have an idea of how games are going to be played and how many doubleheaders and whatnot, and you know, how big rosters are going to be, then I will probably, you know, narrow my focus more on making changes. But for right now, just as we stand, like, I know that it's going to be a shorter season. I know that we're going to have a lot more doubleheaders, and I know we're going to have bigger rosters. Like, I don't know how big or small those changes are, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be a part of every proposal. So by the time we get an actual plan, I will probably change my idea on pitching quite a bit, just because once I know how, like, once I can make more guesses or more educated guesses about the usage of starters and relievers, then I'll change my values some more. But the big change, you know, going into this mock draft, and just like what I'm thinking right now, is I want more rock solid hitting. I am willing, you know, I was kind of already this way on, you know, pre-pandemic drafts. I was skipping out on early pitching a lot more just because it felt like this market wise that everyone was going really heavy. And it just, I found my most values in drafts, you know, especially in those first like 10 rounds or so, were just hammering elite hitting because everyone was jumping on pitching so much. And with the expanded rosters, it makes me want more higher floor elite hitting than I would normally want, just because I'm worried about the guys that there's going to be a lot more platoon sensitivity. Like if there's even a whiff, like if we have a bunch of doubleheaders and we have 40 or 50 man roster, or, you know, 40 man rosters with, you know, a 20 or 30 man taxi squad, like any sort of, like if you have any sort of platoon splits, like managers aren't going to hesitate because it is a short season. It's going to be a sprint. They don't have time for, you know, average to above average hitters that are hitting fifth or sixth or whatever, they don't have time for you to not be able to hit left-handers. Like, they're not gonna let you. I don't think they're gonna let you try and work it out. Or they will just, they'll shuffle somebody else in and constantly be playing matchups. Guys, so, you know, we'll talk about my draft, but I wanted guys that were, you know, you always want guys that are hitting one through four. But I really wanted that even more. I wanted switch hitters more. I want guys that I think that for whatever reason, I'm confident that they are going to stay in the lineup, even if they hit some smooth. And that's the big change I made. And like I said, once we get a schedule, once we know what parks we're playing in, then I will hone in more on my pitching, because I think you're going to have to manage your pitching a lot differently.
Yeah, and since you mentioned that, obviously you watch the show every single week, which you should be doing. You saw we talked about that, you know, some of the potential biggest risers and fallers based on one of the proposals, which is these neutral parks. Of course, we don't know what's going to happen. It seems to me pretty unlikely that everyone's just playing in home stadiums. You already got some states and some governors saying, like, yeah, you're not playing in my state. You know, certain parks are just going to be off limits. Yeah, and countries, I guess you could say Canada. New York, I don't see that happening. So anyways, we'll assume that at least some teams will have a neutral field. So there's going to be guys affected by that. So we already talked about that. And then you mentioned with the plate appearances, who's hitting at the top of the lineup? You've been breaking it down on, you know, series that's on Rotoballer right now. I think we talked about that a couple weeks ago, too, on here. The XPA, right, expected plate appearances. So that's definitely a factor, too. Would you say it's just kind of a more conservative approach in general, right? You want to make sure that you have those high floor guys. I know when we did that a few weeks ago with Justin Mason, that was a 24-hour pod-a-thon he did for charity. Mm-hmm. It was fun. We both jumped in there at different times. And I said something similar. I said, I want those guys who might turn out to be boring, not the guys you're going to chase early, but I'm going to kind of stack those guys like a Brian Reynolds, you know? He's not going to steal 20 bases, probably not going to steal 10 bases, right? He's not going to hit 30 home runs, but I know he's going to be in that lineup, even though it's not a great lineup. He'll probably be somewhere around the middle. He's going to be in there pretty much every day because the Pirates, they basically have nobody else to put in there. You know what I mean? He's not an exciting player. He's not going to win my league, but I can count on him. And he's going to give me solid production in, you know, at least four categories. So, you know, players like that, I think you're kind of onto something. There's only so many players you can get early who, you know, are going to be, you know, rock stars at the plate. But then load it up on those guys, you know, instead of somebody who, like you said, you know, a rookie who you might have taken a chance on later, like Joe Adell. Well, maybe he doesn't even see the field this year. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. To your point about Reynolds, like I feel that, you know, I feel the same way. Just about, I'm more willing to take players on lesser teams because I know they're going to play. Like, Ryan Reynolds is going to bat first or second for the Pirates, and barring injury, he's going to do that all year. If the Pirates aren't going anywhere, they have zero reason to play someone else other than Brian Reynolds. And there's a lot of players like that. Like, those teams, you know, in the sprint of a season, there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to be in it. But we also know there are going to be some teams that aren't going to be in it. Pirates are not going to be in it. The Marlins are not going to get it. I'm sorry. The Tigers, the Royals, like, these guys, they're not going to play. And, like, they're not going to, like, Brian Reynolds isn't going to get platooned. I'm off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure he didn't have split problems anyway. But just using him as an example, like, why would they mess around with, they don't need to get their young guys looked. Like, they want Reynolds to be, he's pretty good for the Pirates. And these guys on the lesser teams, but I know they're going to stay locked into that top third of the order. Yeah, I want more of those guys, because I want the PAs. Like, I'm really worried about, like, I'm just worried about, for you get down in that lineup, you already have, you know, if you're hitting in the lower third of the lineup, you already have issues that make you have more risk about bringing back fantasy value. But in this year, when managers will have a just giant array of players that can fill in for many different situations with no penalties about sending people down and options and stuff like that, then yeah, I'm really worried about those guys. And to your point about Adele and other rookies, I don't care how good a rookie you are, or top prospect you are, if you're on a good team and you hit a cold streak and they have plenty of options to fill your shoes, Rook, like, they're going to make you sit for a while. And so, yeah, those guys are scary. Like, I'm hunting PAs, and I'm already more inclined to take, you know, this, you know, more boring, safer guys anyway, especially when everyone's hammering pitching around me. But now I'm even more inclined.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, your point, that's the same thing with the platoon situation. Guys that you think might kind of collect plate appearances, you don't know at this point. I mean, they could, but those utility players, and I'm thinking, because we'll see a situation later in this draft, I took a guy who probably real life it might be a little too risky. I don't know, Mauricio Dubon. And, you know, I was between him and like Colton Wong, who could be hitting. I don't know, where do you have him projected to hit as far as plate appearances? Is he going to hit the top of the lineup or no?
Yeah. For right now, off the top of my head, I think Roster Resource has him at second.
Second, I think, right.
For the Cardinals right now. But okay. He is like he's one of those guys that he can be very, very streaky, and you know, he could get moved down in the lineup. He could get just platooned. Just like there's just guys, lots of guys that don't even have dramatic split plot problems normally that would usually not be in danger of losing at bats to a platoon in a normal year. I think they're going to get hit with that just because managers will have so many different options.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's get to the actual draft. I'm going to show y'all our board here. Let's start with the actual first, second, third, fourth, all the way to 12. All right, so for this mock, randomly assigned spots, I got the third spot, which I actually enjoyed. Nick, let's see. Let's make sure we got the right team here, because I see you there, not to be confused with Nicky Nicks.
For two. Yes.
Which is Nick Mariano. So you were right ahead of me. You got the number two spot.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I don't think we're going to spend our time right now doing the whole Trout, Yelich, who should be number one debate. We actually did that. I think our very first episode ever was who should be number one, right? Or is Mike Trout still number one? I think that was the debate. And in this draft, he's number two. Were you pretty happy to get Trout number two? I was pretty happy to get Yelich number three.
Yeah, I was not upset by that at all.
I'd say that kind of fits the what you're saying, the category of rock solid hitting. I think he's pretty safe to get his plate appearances.
Yeah, the Trout guy's pretty safe. If he plays, what a bummer would that be if we actually do get baseball back and there is just a smattering of players that are like, nope, not doing it. Like Snell, for example. I know Trout said something a few months ago and Kershaw about their worries about leaving their family and dangers and whatnot. And man, that would turn fantasy into an absolute just cluster.
How soul just like crushing random. Would that be if you number one or two pick and Mike Trout is like, nah, I'm gonna sit the season out. Like,
wow. No, out. It would be brutal.
Okay, we're gonna assume that won't happen. All right. Now first round. I wouldn't say any big surprises here. I don't know about Trevor Story. Maybe I don't know about first round, especially talking about maybe not playing in Coors Field. Cole, DeGrom, and Buehler, three starting pitchers in the first round. That's not really too different than what we'd seen pre-March. So I don't think anything too crazy in the first round here, is there?
Yeah, no. Bubba taking Buehler at pick eight, like that is very high, you know, compared to most drafts I've seen. But at the same time, like, Bubba thinks he's a Cy Young candidate. I think he's a Cy Young candidate. I love Walker Buehler. Like, if Walker Buehler returns first round value, no one is going to be surprised. He's on that track to a 1A pitcher. He seems to be knocking on that elite door. So yeah, that's high, but not really. And then like you said, Story, just because of the Coors factor, easily the funniest part of the draft was seeing our own Nick Mariano at number eight, who is like the original Trevor Story guy, like the original ride or die, and knowing that he was going to have to make the choice to not pick his guy at eight. I think he said something in the chat about feeling dirty before he did it.
He sucked his guns. He didn't take him.
Yeah, didn't take him. Took bets instead. Like getting bets at eight or getting bets at nine is terrific. Well,
yeah, but actually, to me, more surprising. Talk about the Colorado factor. No, okay, so Story went first round, but Nolan Arenado now is dropping toward the end of the second round. Now I get Story's going to give you the stolen bases, and Arenado isn't. So I get that, but is that still too late? I mean, he's not like a product of court. We're not talking about Vinny Castilla here, right?
No. No, I don't think Arenado's a product of Coors, but that just kind of speaks to, like, you can't run from Coors. We talked about that versus pitchers, but it's the same with hitters. Like, you can't ignore the fact that it's going to give a big bump to every hitter. And I think he's fine without Coors, but is he a first rounder without Coors? No, because he was already kind of going in that, you know, most drafts, he pretty much, almost every draft I've been in, he's been locked into that like 12 to 14 spot. Seeing him drop to, the eighth pick of the second round, like, it's weird to see when you see it on the board and you're like, man, Arenado really fell. But then you start to think about it, you're like, yeah, man, without the stolen base, like with Story, like you said, you can at least, you know, say, yeah, no Coors, but I know he's going to give me some of every category. With Arenado, with no stolen bases and the no Coors effect, like, his numbers start becoming a lot more pedestrian. That's relatively speaking, like, pedestrian as far as, you know, the fantasy players being drafted around him. Yeah. So, yeah, like, it's weird to see his name drop that far, but at the same time, like, I totally get it. Like, I'm not taking Colorado hitters right now.
Yeah, I mean, to me, usually, like you said, once he gets past pick 15, you think, okay, someone's got to take Arenado. But so he didn't. It wasn't scandalous or anything. I mean, he was still a second round pick, but it was interesting to me. He fell. He was picked after Rendon, but I can see it. So then we go and, oh man, total homer pick, taking Flaherty there. I mean, really. No. But okay, so interesting though, let's talk to this, okay, because you got, you know, Cole DeGrom, Buehler, Scherzer, and then I was kind of surprised more starting pitchers weren't taken a little earlier. Third round is where you see the run there. Verlander, Bieber, mm-hmm. Clevinger, and then Strasburg and Snell, who now is going to be off everyone's draft board. Okay, so talk to me about Flaherty over a guy like Verlander, Clevinger, non-homers and aside.
Yeah, so that's yeah, obviously, I think I've talked enough trash on Cardinals by now that you should, you know, hope everyone understands that I will talk trash about Cardinals if they're not any good. I would be on the Flaherty hype train even if he was not a Cardinal. I have written about him many times. I'm going to write him more. He is, like, as you know, we talked about your knocking on that door to the first tier. I think Flaherty is right behind Buehler in that regard. You know, great picks mix. He's had increased velocity on his fastball for, you know, a couple seasons now. Got a nasty slider. He has an underrated curveball, in my opinion. I end up talking about his curveball quite a bit, even though he only throws it like 12, 13% at a time. But I think that was one of the big reasons that he had – even though it's not a big strikeout pitch for him, it is a big weapon for him against left-handers. And he was, I'm actually getting ready to put something out with this and, you know, comparing some heat maps to just the way he was throwing it. And he threw his curveball. He had a lower release point in the first half and his location really struggled. And then he cleaned that up in the second half and it helped him out against left-handers, but just overall. I see him as taking that, you know, taking that next step again. He's not going to put up the, I think 197 ERA the second, or no, a 0.96 ERA, something ridiculous, a 0.67 whip second half. He's not going to do that, but he has all the things you like to see in a breakout, increased velocity, honed in stuff, and decreasing walk rate, increasing. So we're liking there, but at the same time, there is a grouping for me in my values. I have Verlander's obviously interesting just because of, you know, before pandemic and his injury and surgery. I obviously everyone had him a lot further up. It's in this weird season that just like I wouldn't be as worried about Verlander without all of this going on if he was just sitting around like everyone else. But the fact that he's recovering from surgery, and I think he'll be fine healthy, but it's just like we talked about earlier, I'm being a little more conservative and these little question marks can throw me off. And you mentioned Clevinger and Snell. Like I have Clevinger and Snell, like, you know, right behind Flaherty. Snell a little bit ahead of Clevinger, I think, in our latest rankings. So, you know, I'd be happy with any of those guys, but Flaherty's my guy. I think there is a little separation between him and those other names. So,
all right. And then because you talked about looking at the board here, you talked about, you know, getting those rock solid hitters, but you still want to grab that one pitcher, because then you didn't go pitcher again. I don't even know when you grabbed your next starting pitcher, because it's not in the first 12 rounds here. You didn't grab a pitcher until round 11. That was your first closer in Giles. So is that kind of, I mean, you know, we just talked about this with Chris on the football podcast. We do a mock draft, and you know, you have to have a running back early, and then after that it's like it kind of falls off. And you know, you almost feel like you have to grab a starting pitcher, right? You have to have one of those top guys, but then you can wait because there's not as much separation between the rest of the crowd. But was waiting then that part of that conscious strategy, like you said, is like you want to solidify that lineup?
Yes, it was. And also, I would be remiss if I mentioned that I had totally forgot we had a mock draft. So I was doing this draft while driving to get sushi / standing in line in a one-out situation, like on my phone, like people looking at me like I'm a crazy person as I yell about things and try to figure out the Yahoo app. And it was a 30-second draft clock. So it's just like speed crack dating. And but no, that was the general plan. Like, I'm just, give me some hitters. Like, once I got Flaherty locked down, it was just about, I'll take, you know, I didn't have my rankings on me, but we had just done them. So I had them pretty fresh in my mind. I was just like, you know what, I'll just keep taking hitters. And, you know, my plans kind of got screwed up later just because I should have known this. All of us roto baller guys are well-versed in the J.B. Branson bullpen method. I should have known that I would not be able to do my normal just traipsing through the teen rounds and picking all my favorite relievers as I build my Franken aces. should have known that you jokers would be on all the guys that I wanted. So that kind of, you know, you'll see in the second half of my draft, like I think 9 out of my last 11 picks are pitchers. But I just, you know, I kept seeing value with hitters, and I just, you know, I just kept hammering them.
Yeah, I made sure I got Seth Lugo before anybody else did, because they always have him ranked like crazy low. And then you look at his actual ranking versus like the expert ranking is like a 200 difference. But I was like, yeah, I know he's going to get taken. I'm not waiting this time. But
that was easily the most you annoyed me the entire draft.
Well, that's great because we didn't know this. I gave you
a fist shake.
Oh, good. Like, was the
any line? Had, like, yeah.
The sushi with it in one hand and then the fish shake, like, ah. And then, okay.
Oh, mad. I was like, ah.
Yeah. Okay, good. That makes
sense. Yeah, I get Lugo in like every draft. Like, and you have Presley too. He's another guy that I really like to get. Just this was a very different draft for me in that I usually come away with some pretty shiny ratios for my pitchers, and that was not the case just because way the draft was going, like pitching didn't get hammered early like you mentioned in the past couple rounds, in the first couple rounds. Then it really got like we went on some multiple like big pitching runs in rounds and just,
yeah,
you know, pitching got destroyed. And I'm pretty stubborn on, like, I'll take any guy if they fall to the right price. But I'm pretty stubborn with, like, I won't, like, I'm not going to reach for guys just because I don't, like, I'm not going to reach for guys I don't like just because I don't have very many pitchers right now. Like, right. So I kind of switched my strategy up and had lots of offense and then threw a lot of pitchers at the wall at the end and got a lot of guys that I have better values on than the draft price I got them at. And there'd be a lot more uncertainty. And like I said, I have a lot higher ratios than I'm accustomed to, but still fine with it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So look, you did load up on offense. You got your steals for sure. You got Mondesi, Luis Robert in the eighth round. And of course, Trout will give you some. So and you got your power with, you know, E5 there, Gallo. So loaded up definitely on the hitting categories. There were some runs. Like you said, there was five pitchers here taken in round three, five again, round four. What do you think here of, I noticed there was actually two teams. Okay. So David Swan here, start out with four hitters and then went pitching in six straight rounds. He went Greinke, and then, Aroldis Chapman, Kirby Yates, Kyle Hendricks, Jesus Luzardo, James Paxton. So he took basically two of the top closers and then those four starters. And there's another team here, Raymond, took Luis Castillo, Lucas Giolito, Trevor Bauer, Liam Hendricks, Mike Soroka, and Iglesias. So same thing, four starters, two relievers in the first 12 rounds. So overall, you say, well, it's pretty balanced between hitting and pitching. But going on a run like that, just kind of loading up on pitching, how do you feel that's going to work out? Because that's kind of the opposite of what you did. But did you think there's something sound to that strategy too?
Yeah, there is. Like, you know, it kind of depends. Like with Davis, for example, like his first three picks were Acuna, Harper, and unfortunately Devers. I rage picked Xander Bogaerts because I was convinced that I was going to get Devers. I was so annoyed at him. But like Acuna, Harper, and Devers are three guys in my personal rankings. Like I have all of them in top 20.
Yeah, he did have the number one pick, so that helps. His offense kind of got off to a good start. So I guess there's more flexibility.
Yeah, so you can get away with that. And you know, I got something coming out later about Zach Greinke. I'm not really a Zach Greinke fan this year. But Chapman, Yates, like that's I've been grabbing more premium closer, you know, even pre-pandemic. Like I've been getting one top starter and then getting some top-er relievers and hammering hitting just because that's the way it's been flying. So you know, yeah, I don't have any problem with that. I think Raymond has a little more risk just because, you know, he took hitters with four out of his, you know, five picks, like you mentioned, but he wasn't picking first. So he doesn't have Acuna, Harper, and Devers. He has Story, JD Martinez, and Pete Alonso. All great players. Like we already talked about Story, but when your hitters aren't, like, it's easier for David to catch up just because the hitters are, like, separating hitters. At Raymond, if, like, some of those hitters go a little south and, you know, his number one pitcher is Castillo, which I like, you know, a lot better than Greinke, but, you know, a couple of, like, his you know, it's just the relativity of the difference between picking first and picking 11th, like, the same strategy doesn't work quite as well because you're getting slightly lesser players at every pick.
And the one thing I'd say about Raymond's team is that a lot of the pitchers he did take, there's some question marks with them. You know, Giolito, I love Giolito, but we haven't seen him do it, right, in consecutive years. Like Castillo, he's pretty established. Giolito, and, you know, kind of tail off the end of the second half, but still. And then, you know, I guess Bauer kind of gets a pass for the home park because maybe he won't be playing in Great American Ballpark, but might be a little overrated. And then Soroka, you know, we both have talked about Iglesias, not guaranteed to be the closer all year if he struggles. Mm-hmm. So just a little more risk in general, I think, with the pitchers he did take. That's my beef. But then we did see a major pitching run there, ninth round, several guys taken. Talk about comparing from March till now. Is there some players that stand out here as far as seeing that they've gone up in value? I know we've talked about Colorado players already, of course, you know, some of them going down in value. Anybody else stand out to you as somebody that maybe can't get as cheap as you used to before? I know some of the injured players, of course, going higher. We see Aaron Judge in the seventh round, also Giancarlo Stanton. I'm not even sure how to value those guys at this point, honestly, because with Judge, it's like, oh, he's had time to heal. But then I heard, well, it's a rib thing, and he might not even play at all this year. So I don't even know, like, what to make of him.
Yeah, and there was 5 months in between the end of the season and when we actually found out that Judge was actually hurt. You know, so yeah, he's a big question mark for me. Giancarlo, we talked about, is basically made of glass. If you breathe on his calf, it will pop. So always worried about that. But specific, like looking at our draft board and just seeing value, I don't think hitters are being as affected as much. I think pitching strategies on drafts have changed a lot. And just looking at our board, it's like, a lot of guys have been got pushed into the top 100, top 120 that, I think of more of like 130 to 150 guys. And there's just been like a general pushing up of, not panicking, but just like you hear people talk on Twitter and in chats all the time of like people are finding aces more valuable. They're finding a lot of people think that bumping up how many relievers you're going to carry is a smart move. And I think we saw a lot of that play out. Like, you always see pitching runs in every draft, but we had some more pitching runs later, like that ninth round one. It's like a lot of guys went in that round that I had my eye on. Like, I wanted Liam Hendricks. I wanted Edwin Diaz. I was really hoping to get one of those guys next year or next round. That's why I didn't plan on my second pitcher not being taken until, Ken Giles in the 11th round. But that happened because guys were getting, the closers I liked and the starters that weren't elite, but I thought they were going to return SP2 values were just, they were gone. So yeah, that's just the general feel I get is people aren't messing around with getting their pitching. Like they're locking it in.
To me, it's interesting. It's almost counterintuitive talking about what's going to happen. And there might be, like you said, more relievers on the roster. There might be more openers. There might be, all this craziness that's going to happen. I would think that it might devalue starting pitching because we'll see less wins out of guys, right? There might be less innings pitched from starters if you're going 7 innings in a doubleheader or whatever, But to me, it's odd that the starting pitching is going up in value when to me they might be less productive as a whole. And you talk about, okay, getting your ace might be more important, so I might be more likely to get a guy like Scherzer or Buehler, early. But when you look, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I'm looking at it in the first 10 rounds, a guy like James Paxton, who's been hurt and always hurt, but even besides, I don't see him as a fantasy ace or even an SP2. Zach Gallen, who some people think won't even make the rotation, which, he will, but, Frankie Montas, was good for half a season and, until he got busted. But to me, it's just a little early for those guys. I don't know, because I got Verlander, who, assuming he's healthy, is rock solid. Corbin is pretty safe pick to me. Berrios, and not what was it you said? I that was kind of an accidental pick on my part. It wasn't.
I said you accidentally picked Jose Berrios.
I'm a fan of Berrios. Look, not the most exciting, but he's gonna show up. He'll do his thing. He's kind of a safe guy. Like, I'd rather have him than Zach Allen. But do you know what I'm saying? As far as the type of starting pitching, I'd rather get with a boring guy like Berrios and be safe with those ratios.
Yeah, I feel the same. Like, there was already, like, for me, it was that first tier of pitchers with Paul DeGrom and friends And then that, like, that one B tier for me was, you know, Flaherty, Clevinger, Snell, Strasburg. And then there was already a glob, you know, all score uses all the time. It's just the big glob of pitcher where there's not going to be a ton of separating factors. But for me, that glob kind of has gotten pulled out. Looking at this draft and looking at other drafts, I think it's compressed for a lot of people. Like, they're more anxious to lock down those pitchers. But for me, it's the opposite. All those guys, and you know, you can kind of see in my draft, like, all those guys that were already kind of iffy in the middle, not iffy, but for what they're going in those, you know, rounds 5 through 12 or whatever, those guys are getting pushed back for me. Like, they become even globbier. I'm pretty sure that's not a word, but that's how I kind of think of it. It's like, there's a lot more risk for those. Like, you know, you look through all those guys, like the ones you mentioned with Gallen and Montez and et cetera. There's those question marks become more pronounced in me. Like, with guys I already weren't already like questionless, like the 1A, 1B guys. Like, now those questions become more important to me because I don't know how the season's going to play out. I don't know what the usage is going to be. Like, I'm not worried about Garrett Cole's usage. I'm not worried about Walker Buehler's or Flaherty's or any of those guys. I mean, Snell maybe, just because he plays for the Rays, and who knows what wacky stuff they'll do. Mm-hmm. But all the other guys, like, it's kind of the same feeling with hitters in the platoon thing we were talking about. It's like, if Chris Paddock gets in trouble in the fourth inning and manager has just a mess of bullpen arms at his disposal and can just bullpen it out the rest of the game with a bunch of randos, like, I think that's going to come into play with decisions on pulling people. Like, I'm worried about these guys that are aces for their team, but not necessarily fantasy aces, getting pulled earlier and just having overall less innings as managers try to be their most efficient. So yeah, for me, like, everything's kind of expanded out. Those guys have moved back and hitters have moved up. And, but for a lot of other people, it's the opposite. And, I don't know.
Yeah. We've seen a lot of starting pitchers that kind of mid rotation, even end of rotation guys seem to be rising. And to me, and I can't say I didn't, you know, quite go to your length of strategy. You know, I wound up with, I guess, four pitchers in that first 12. And to some extent, I try not to fall to, like, the fear of missing out thing. But, like, okay, if I wait too long, then there's going to be no starting pitcher I really want left. So I kind of tried to strike where I thought there was value, you know, where I preferred a pitcher over a hitter. So let's look at the last part of the draft here, 13 through 24. And, of course, once you get later on, you know that you can't talk too much about ADP because, you know, these are all late-round picks. But we still see a lot of blue on here, a lot of pitchers, and some guys. I mean, I don't even know if they need to be on rosters. We don't know what we're going to see from them. Like, like Michael Kopech here. You know, we don't really know what Dustin May's role is going to be. You know, if he is a bullpen arm, he'd still bring you value maybe. And then, you know, you and I took some chances here. You know, I got my bullpen guys. Thank you very much. Got Seth Lugo and Ryan Presley. I'm taking a chance on Freddie Peralta and my man Griffin Canning. You took Spencer Howard and Mackenzie Gore. So is this just, you know, at this point, since there's so much unknowns, like, what the hell, why not? Just take a chance on a guy who could pop, or, you know, what are you thinking there?
Yeah, I, you know, a lot of this is just you know, what happened with the draft. I went more extreme than I've been going on lots of hitters. And a lot of that was just draft specific, because guys were just flying off the board and I wasn't willing to reach for substandard, in my mind, pitching. So I just once I filled out my offense and, had a couple bench guys, I, you know, it's not throwing darts, but it's just, I'll overwhelm with numbers instead of quality. And it's not like I took junkie guys. You know, I'm looking at, of course, everyone looks good according to my rankings. All my picks look good. But so I have a lot of guys that I have a lot higher value on than ADP or, you know, where they went. I got Andrew Haney at 191. He's 150 in my ranks. I got Keon Kella at, you know, 170. I have him at 144. So I just kept hammering guys that I like more. And I don't think they're, you know, aces or going to be aces, but I know they're all riskier and I know they're all not going to work out. But if a Caleb Smith goes off, or, you know, you mentioned the rookies, I got Mackenzie Gore and Spencer Howard. I get Spencer Howard in every draft. So that's not really much of a change, but I think that's the first time I've drafted Gore, just because he usually gets, I usually wait longer for those rookies. But in this draft, because of the way my team was shaping up, like I was going to take more chances with pitching. So I don't necessarily like Howard. I really like, just because no matter what the season is, I think he's going to make the starting rotation. Because the only impediments to him doing so is Vince Velasquez and Zach Elfin and the corpse of what UCJ Arrieta. Mackenzie Gore, on the other hand, is like, I don't know. He's a lot more riskier in this pandemic world, but he is a PS phenomenal. And if he does get a chance, then yeah, I think he'll return value. So yeah, all of these picks were just me trying to overwhelm with volume. And, you know, I would just be hoping that some of them go off.
There you go. I mean, that's kind of what the end of a draft is for, right? You know, you're looking for upside. And then let's look out for some guys that, given this new set of circumstances in the later rounds here, that you notice are maybe on the rise or maybe worth taking a chance more. Like for me, example, Aquino is a guy who throughout the preseason I was starting to fade really hard, so starting to worry about his playing time. But now, maybe yeah. Universal DH, now he's got a spot maybe in that kind of crowded Reds outfield, and he definitely got the upside. So as a bench, you know, outfielder for me, kind of worth it. Dubon, the same thing. Anybody else that kind of strikes you, you know, if you look at the latter half of the draft here, that you think is a riser? You know, Dylan Carlson, talk about another Cardinal there.
Yeah.
I mean, don't know if he was going to make the roster or still will make the roster, but, you know, who else stands out?
Yeah, no, you mentioned two of the big ones with Aquino and Carlson. Both got, you know, I like Carlson more in the long run. But Aquino, like I wrote some about Aquino last year, and just, you know, besides the crazy hot streak that everyone knows about, like a billion home runs in a week. But I like Aquino for the future just because he had a definitive change in performance after a definitive change in his swing and approach. And I like those things. Those things tend to be sticky. I don't think he's going to be the player he was when he came up in August, but I think he's going to be very good. And then the Reds just kept signing people and the outfield got more and more crowded. And I was fading him hard, like, more and more and more. Like, I just didn't think he was going to play. I thought he was going to be in triple all year. But now, Universal DH, like, Taylor made there. Yeah, give that to him. So, yeah, he's one of the ones. Carlson, like, he goes from, you know, in a normal world, I didn't think he was going to make the opening day roster. I thought he'd get called up and then be very good when he played. But the Cardinals have a messy outfield. And there was just going to be a lot of rotation. And, you know, I really like Carlson, but I like them for about, you know, 400 at bats or 350 or whatever. Now, once again, Universal DH, like those guys are really popping up. On the, you know, on the pitching side, like I think the shorter inning guys, the Garrett Richards, the Nathan Eovaldis of the world, that, and I mean, you mentioned Paxton earlier, like he's, you know, he's a better pitcher than that. But the guys that are, you know, risky shorter plays, like whether because of injury or because you can never trust them to go more than, you know, last more than five innings, those guys are jumping up quite a bit.
Yeah. And, you know, at this point, like I said, there's risk everywhere. I mean, you're not going to take somebody late in the draft and, you know, think they're going to be rock solid. But like I said, even if a guy that doesn't have a defined role or, you know, we don't know about playing time, I think it's worth it because there's so many unknowns at this point. I mean, you have to go with upside, especially more so. I think it's, to me, I think the big takeaway is early, you want to be even more conservative, like you said, especially if it's focusing on hitting or whatnot, or securing that, you know, established closer rather than trying to, you know, mix and match for saves. I think you need to do more of what you used to do, is probably go really conservative early and take a lot more risks late, you know, because it's if there's a season, this could be a crazy season. So, so if y'all want to check out the full results in the draft board, I know we've kind of been flashing on here, but if you're listening to this on iTunes, you didn't see any of that. But if you want to check out the results, we'll have it for you on rotoballer.com as we have continuing fantasy baseball analysis all preseason long, no matter how long that is, we're here for you. Nick, what do you got on tap? We were talking before the show, you focusing in on Sierra.
Yeah, I have a, I got the first part done. I'm sure we'll have that out soon. And then I'm finishing up the second part. Just trying to identify, looking at the differences in ERA and their Sierra, which is Skills Interactive ERA, an ERA evaluator that is different than FIP and XFIP, and it really focuses on strikeout rate, ground ball rate, and doesn't punish as much for fly balls. It's not a predictive stat. It is technically a backwards looking evaluator, but it speaks more to the skills that are underlying the ERA that you actually see, and is of the ERA evaluators is the most predictive as far as what the following year ERA is going to be. So I took a look at some players in, three pitchers in each part in the top 100 that had the largest gaps between their ERA and Sierra. These first two are going to be about the ERA overachievers, the guys that significantly outperform their Sierra by, you know, a run or more.
All right. Sounds good. Definitely worth a look. Nick, I have to say that you're definitely one of our overachievers, always pushing the envelope when it comes to baseball analysis. So, I mean, that is a compliment.
Thank you.
All right, guys. So thanks for watching. Be back next week to talk more fantasy baseball, and still hope that there's an opening day coming. We're always holding out hope. All right. Thanks for watching.
Thanks.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.